2, The Owner's Manual Radio Show with Dr. Michael Roizen. And check out Dr. Oz and Dr. Roizen's website, youbeauty.com. Here are Joe Galewski, Dr. Deb Lonser, and of course, Dr. Michael Roizen, MD.
Welcome to another show. It's the passionate radio show that helps you take control of your genes to what? Well, become the world expert on your body, you, the Owner's Manual Radio Show, with Dr. Michael Roizen, the Chief Wellness Officer at the Cleveland Clinic. To join on the show today through email, udocs@gmail.com, youdocs@gmail.com. And thanks for being with us today, our last few days of winter. Spring will begin.
We hope our last few days of winter.
Well, the calendar says it'll start on about 4 or 5 days on Wednesday, the 20th of March. So it's going to be slow to leave. You live in the Northeast. Apparently, the cold weather will hang around for a bit. But that's typical of March. How are you, Dr. Mike?
I am excellent. We had some snow last night, which was unusual. We had 71 degrees last Sunday and yesterday, snowstorm.
My motto after the 1st of March is, let it melt. That's my motto. Anything that falls after the 1st of March is going to have to stay there until it melts away. It's just one of these things that I live by.
You didn't shovel?
We haven't had anything appreciable, anything is kind of low.
Well, we didn't have anything appreciable, but I did get out the shovel because I was afraid, because it's going to get cold tonight. I was afraid of turning into a sheet of ice.
Well, that could be, and that's pretty rough, too. Our guest at 34 past the hour, Dr. Sam Parnia, one of the world's leading experts on the scientific study of death, the human mind-brain relationship, and near-death experiences. Now, contrary to popular belief, death is not a moment in time, like when the heart stops beating, respiration ends, or the brain stops functioning. Death, rather, I think they say, is a process that can be interrupted well after it's begun. So our guest at 34 past the hour, it sounds like an interesting topic.
It is. Just finding out what is death and how long afterwards and what the consistent findings are of people who have been resuscitated for death. It's a fascinating book. It's not morbid. It's actually makes you think deeply about what it is that we call humans.
What happens when we die? That's the question. I'm not sure we'll be able to answer that in the amount of time we have with Dr. Parnia, but that's a mystery, isn't it? What happens when we die?
That's right. It's the subject of do you talk to others or not? It actually was a very, there's a really interesting story about, I don't want to kind of give it away, but there's a story about someone here who dies, quote unquote dies, meets his, I think it's his cousin after he dies, who says it's not his time, and he is resuscitated and remembers the conversation.
Well.
So we'll talk about a number of these things.
Right, Erasing Death, Dr. Sam Parnia at 34 past the hour. Think you might have an idea about the real age tip?
I do. The first real age tip is peppermint oil proven to resolve upset stomachs. Peppermint oil is proven to resolve upset stomachs.
Okay, very good. The real age tip before the end of the hour. Well, the top story of the week has to be the overturn of Mayor Mike Bloomberg from New York City's making it illegal to buy a 16-ounce and above soft drink, and it was overturned by a New York judge. What are your thoughts?
Well, you know, I thought the ruling wasn't written well, meaning the judge didn't write it well.
I don't think the law was written well either, though.
And in addition, the ruling wasn't a good one, was a rotten ruling, because we have to deal with this issue, and we have to come face-to-face with it. This was an easy way of reminding us to come face-to-face with it. And so in that regard, I think we should have, I want to see something about the ban continued, or at least we have the discussion continue, because obesity is costing us a huge amount. And if it was just the people who were obese or just the smokers who were causing us causing the problem for themselves, it wouldn't be a problem. They are causing problems for themselves. But because we share insurance costs, every obese person, you pay for every obese person, you pay for every smoker, you pay for every person who lets themselves get diabetes or express their type 2 diabetes genes when they don't have to, you pay for everyone who doesn't get control of their blood pressure. And so because of that, it is a important concern to talk about. Are we going to pay for each other, or are we going to have insurance rates that are solely set by your choices and what happens to you? Well, in the current law, we share insurance rates, and that's what insurance is about, pooling rates. But we aren't, if you will, accounting for all of our pre-existing conditions and all of our risk, and we got rid of that. But part of getting rid of that must mean that we all take responsibility for ourselves and for each other getting healthier.
I agree on everything you said. How would this law have been effective then?
Well, by just making the people who would have those 32-ounce sugar drinks or the large Frappuccinos, which also have a ton of sugar and saturated fat, just making them think about it brings up the issue of we have to take responsibility. And if you will, the average American is still consuming 400 calories of straight sugar a day. There's no value in that. We should eliminate that added sugar and the added syrups and the 900% whole grains as a society. If we do that, we can radically, substantially cut our total medical costs. And if we substantially do that, we can be more competitive as a society and have a higher standard of living, or at least maintain what we are and eliminate a lot of the budget deficit. You know, $190 billion of our budget deficit is caused by obesity.
Do you know what I've done? Would you like to hear what I would have done?
Go ahead. I want to hear what you would have done.
Here's what I would have done. Instead of this law, which I don't think would be effective, instead of this law, I would, number one, I would take any money Bloomberg put into this, if anything. If he didn't, he's got a lot of money. Put it toward education programs about this. Educate people about it. And number two, produce public service announcements similar to the public service announcements we see for smoking. How these people, the shock public service announcements showing people who smoke to be pretty gruesome looking. I would put an obese kid into a public service announcement holding one of these big drinks and show people what your kid can be if they live this kind of lifestyle. I would do the same thing with obesity, this issue, as they did with cigarettes.
Well, how are you going to get the money to do that? The way we got the money for the public service announcements for tobacco was to tax the tobacco companies. And believe it or not, the tax on the tobacco companies is about 1/35th of the cost of diseases. So you'd have to have a pack of cigarettes be much more expensive, at least $50 and maybe more than that, to pay for the medical costs that a pack of cigarettes induces. How will you do that with sugar and saturated fat and added syrups and that kind of
thing? Do the same thing. Tax it. You can't do that?
I think you'd get more pushback on that than just saying to people, if you're going to get more than a 16-ounce drink, you have to buy two of them.
No, I don't know. I think for what it's worth theoretically, I think that would be much more effective. Education programs and putting these public service announcements out, you know, showing someone who an overweight kid who's drinking a lot of the soda and gaining weight because of it, I think that would really get people to think more. The fitness center that I work out at, by the way, to a certified personal trainer. We were talking about this the other day, and none of them thought that this would be effective, but that's what they think. We'll be back with more of the top medical news stories of the week. We talked about the Bloomberg story. How about fatty dairy products linked to early cancer and heart risks for breast cancer survivors and more on You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show with Dr. Michael Roizen on Radio MD. Stay well.
Hi. Hi, this is Melanie Cole, show host here at Radio MD and a mother of two. I want parents to know about Great Start Life Insurance offered by Guarantee Trust Life Insurance Company. Great Start ensures the future insurability of your children. Now, what does that mean? Too often, people will get an illness or an injury at some point in their lives that afterwards can preclude them from receiving life insurance, and that can cause a lot of problems. But by insuring your children now with the Great Start Plan, the insurance that grows with your children, they'll already be insured regardless of future illness or injury. Find out all about the great benefits of the Great Start Plan. Go to GreatStartGTL.com and see for yourself why Great Start is, well, a great start for your kids. Peace of mind at GreatStartGTL.com. That's GreatStartGTL.com. For the Great Start Plan, go to GreatStartGTL.com.
Plan not available in all states. Life insurance underwritten by Guaranteed Trust Life Insurance Company, Glenview, Illinois.
If you know the symptoms and get the facts, you'll know the signs of a heart attack. Women, listen to me, and when I'm done, if it sounds familiar, call 911.
Pain in your neck, chest,
arms, or jaw,
shortness of breath,
please tell us more. Cold sweats and nausea, tiredness,
it's time to take it serious.
Back pain, stomach pain, shortness of breath, cold sweats, nausea, dizziness. If you know the symptoms and heed the signs, you'll be around for a long, long time. Women, listen to me, and when I'm done, if any sound familiar, call 911.
Learn a song that could save your life. Get a free download at womenshealth.gov/heartattack.
Women, listen to me, and when I'm done, if any sound familiar, call 911. If any sound familiar, call 911.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Are you always looking for places to stop and rest because you're short of breath, wheezing, or coughing? Who wants to live like that? See your doctor for a simple breathing test to find out if it's COPD, a serious lung disease. With treatment, soon you could be living more and stopping less. Visit copd.nhlbi.nih.gov. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Did you know only about 3% of the CEOs of Fortune 500 companies are women?
And of the 18,000 police chiefs in America, less than 2% are women.
So it's no wonder that only 1 in 5 girls believes she has what it takes to lead.
But did you know?
We can change that.
The time you spend with a girl now,
the words you say to her today,
can give her the courage, confidence, and character to become a leader tomorrow.
So speak up.
Get involved.
Nurture her potential.
Share your experience.
Invest your resources.
Did you know?
Together we can get her there.
Get started today. Visit togetherthere.org.
With the American Academy of Pediatrics, I'm Dr. Don Schifrin. It's the time of year when colds and viruses begin making their rounds through schools and families. Sometimes parents will ask for antibiotics, believing they will shorten an illness, allowing their child to return to school or child care quicker. But antibiotics are not usually the answer. Antibiotics are powerful drugs that need to be used cautiously. Antibiotics have no effect on viruses and will not reduce the length of the illness or the symptoms. They are highly effective in treating bacterial infections such as strep throat or bacterial pneumonia. But overuse of antibiotics can make them less effective when truly needed. Some bacteria strains have become resistant to antibiotics as a result of antibiotic overuse. The best way to treat a viral infection is with rest, fluids, and TLC. So feel free to baby your child who has the cold or the flu. Give them lots of love and care, but save the antibiotics for when they are truly needed. And for more information on children's health, visit www.aap.org. With a minute for kids, I'm Dr. Don Schifrin.
And now, back to Dr. Michael Roizen, Dr. Deb Lonser, and Joe Galewski on You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
Thanks to our sponsors, YouBeauty.com and Morning and Night Multivitamins. If you miss a segment, miss a guest, miss a topic, RadioMD.com. You never miss anything, because chances are if you are listening to the show at your favorite radio station and you're not around, well, you never miss it. Just when you are able to do it, go to RadioMD.com and you can catch up on what we do. Our guest at 34 past the hour has an interesting topic to talk about, and so stay around with us for that. We were talking before the break about Mayor Bloomberg's ruling overturned by a judge about soft drinks. Somewhat of a piggyback to that story is one of the top medical stories of the week, Dr. Mike, about how little we actually move. Adding up just how little we actually move, and how little is it that we actually move?
Well, this was a large study, and what they found, they put either continuous pedometer monitor, that is actually accelerometers, which measure movement in any direction. So it wasn't just, steps. It was any kind of movement, even movement during sleep. And what they found, and they put it into step equivalents so that we would know what it was, and what they found is the typical American, and this is kind of crazy, if you will, the average American moves 5,100 steps a day, 5,117 to be specific. And that was looking at 240,000 adults. And if you gave them the pedometer they could look at and see, they would walk about 2,500 more, so 7,600 steps, getting close to the average of the goal we want of 10,000. It turns out people who live in healthier states, such as Colorado, walk 6,500 steps a day on average. People who live in unhealthier states, such as Arkansas and Tennessee, walked an average of 4,500 steps a day. So stepping directly correlates, the amount of steps you take with or without a pedometer, directly correlates with the directly correlates with your overall health.
How was 10,000 steps determined as the milestone, daily goal?
Well, this actually was done in a large set of studies where it turned out that if you walk 10,000 steps a day, and we don't know why this is so, but those who walk 10,000 steps a day have a much lower incidence of metabolic syndrome and type 2 diabetes than those who walk less than 10,000. So if you walk 8,000 steps a day, the incidence over a lifetime was something like 35%. If you walk 10,000 steps a day, the incidence was around 8%. And when you got to 12%, that 12,000 steps a day, it didn't decrease. It wasn't any less than 10,000. And if you got to 6,000, it was more, a higher incidence. So it actually goes down and down and down. And then when you hit 10,000 steps a day, you hit the minimum amount of type 2 diabetes and metabolic syndrome that you will have relating to your stepping.
What's the distance of 10,000 steps?
That's 5 miles. So you walking a golf course, if
that's 10,000
that
steps
every day. In fact, that's, I think that's a good reason you should tell Joel Delmonico you have to walk 10,000 steps every, you have to play golf every day.
Plus you take into account, probably you get a little more extra credit if there are hills, right? You're walking up hills.
Upward steps count, that is going up a staircase. Yep. Each step is actually about 3.8 steps in metabolic rate as going on a level. And actually going downstairs is 1.5 compared to going on a level. So
yeah,
both up and down give you extra stepping.
Yeah, yeah. For example, a 30-minute walk every day, how many steps would you take in a typical 30-minute walk?
3,000. It's 1,000 steps every 10 minutes or 100 a minute.
Oh, that's not many. I thought there'd be more in a 30-minute walk than just 3,000. So you still got a way to go to get to the daily goal. Another 7,000 steps.
Right, but if you're normally walking 5,000 and you do a 30-minute walk, you're at 8,000. It's pretty easy to do another 10 minutes twice a day, and you got the 10.
Yeah,
or
okay.
Just park at the end of the parking lot. You know, what I try and do is I park as far away from my office in a parking lot as possible, as long as it's still in a safe part of the parking lot, and walk to my car.
One of the issues here in Syracuse is always with regard to downtown Syracuse and events or you know, stores or attractions or anything is that, well, there's no parking downtown. You can't find anywhere to park downtown, which I've never have. I have a downtown dentist, and I've had a downtown dentist now for 20 years, and I've never, ever had an issue with parking. And yet people say, well, you can't find a parking space downtown. But the thing about it is what people want. They want to park right in front of where they're going. They don't want to walk the extra block or two, you know, to get to where they're going. They need to park right in front of their destination. So, but there is parking, just that people don't want to take those extra few steps to find a parking space and go to where they need to go. So
that's absolutely right. So the more steps you take, what we would call accidentally, that is on purpose because you're doing it that way, that's the greatest way you can do it.
Let's get to the other exercise question, then we've covered them all in the top stories this week. What to do when you're stressed out by exercise?
Well, this is an interesting study, and it was done in animals. And what it said was that if the animal is stressed because they're forced to exercise, do they still get the exercise benefit? And the answer was yes. Whether you like exercise or not, doing the exercise gives you a longevity benefit of about 6 years and decreases your disability by about 11 or 12 years. So the amazing thing is, just walking, doing cardiovascular exercise, and doing little weights not only lets you live longer, that's a good thing, but even better, you have much less disability towards the end of life, so you can enjoy your life much more. And so we're learning more and more how important exercise is, and you don't have to go crazy. 10,000 steps a day, 30 minutes of weightlifting a week, and 20 minutes three times a week or 60 minutes of cardio is all you need for the maximum health benefit, which, as I said, is about 6 years longer in total life and about 12 years less disability. So it's amazing.
What would stress somebody out about exercising? Is it the
fact they hate it? You know, I hate exercise. I don't want to do it. They go there. They're not happy. They don't have friends that exercise. They don't enjoy the TV programs, whatever. But they do it because they're for their health. And the interesting thing is, even those, at least in the animal model they used, did get the health benefit, even though they didn't like what they were doing. So exercise somehow helps you handle stress as well as the exercise.
And that's interesting because now more than ever before, there's so much information with all the cable channels that we have now to watch. There's so many more information. There's information on healthy eating. There's information on exercise. There are exercise channels out there. So there's certainly enough information out there to provide people to, you know, get out there and get motivated by exercise. Unless that kind of turns people off. I don't know, as you say, people don't like to exercise, and you know, maybe that might be a reason why some people just say, don't bother me anymore. But there's a lot of information out there when it comes to exercise and things to do to stay healthy and feel great and look good, you know, for a long, long time. 570. I'm saying my radio station. I'm thinking in terms of my morning radio show here in Syracuse. Our guest, Dr. Sam Parnia, talks about the death experience, erasing death, the science that is rewriting the boundaries between life and death. Our guest next, you, the Owner's Manual Radio Show on Radio MD. Stay well.
I didn't think it was anything.
I had pain in my abdomen. It just wouldn't go away.
I was spotting, but I had already gone through menopause.
These symptoms may be nothing, but they could be early warning signs of a gynecologic cancer, such as cervical, ovarian, or uterine cancer.
Seeing my doctor probably saved my life.
Warning signs are not the same for everyone. If you think something's wrong, see your doctor. Ask about gynecologic cancer. Call 1-800-CDC-INFO for more information. A message from the Inside Knowledge Campaign and the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
This is Torticure, and it's more than just a bike ride. It's a celebration. It's where every turn of the pedal helps stop diabetes. Where cyclists of all levels come together to make a difference, to raise money, and to raise hope. It's the ride of your life. It's Torticure. Register today at diabetes.org/tour. That's diabetes.org/tour.
With the American Academy of Pediatrics, I'm Dr. Don Schifrin. Snowboarding is a popular winter sport. Snowboards look like big skateboards made from fiberglass and plastic. Snowboarders ride their boards much the way surfers do, steering by shifting their body weight. Most can reach speeds up to 40 miles per hour. Twice as many injuries happen to snowboarders as skiers. The most common injuries are to the wrist, usually when snowboarders use their arms to break a fall. The American Academy of Pediatrics does not recommend this sport for children under age 7. For older children, make sure the snowboard fits the child. An easy way to determine this is to make sure the board stands no higher than the child's nose. Children should always wear helmets and gloves with built-in wrist guards, and they should resist trying advanced stunts or dangerous tricks until they've mastered all the basic snowboarding skills. And for more information on your child's health and safety, visit www.aap.org. With a Minute for Kids, I'm Dr. Don Schifrin.
It's one thing to have a job in this economy, but it's another to have a career that you love. Getting the skills for today's careers may depend on your college degree. So if you're interested in the future of business, electronics, information technology, or drafting and design, call ITT Technical Institute today. With over 100 campuses nationally, ITT Tech can prepare you for a career in one of these fields. After all, tens of thousands of ITT Tech grads have built a solid future. Perhaps they can do the same for you. Classes meet just a few times a week, and financial aid is available to those who qualify. So what's stopping you? For more information and to schedule your campus tour, call ITT Tech toll-free at 800-574-1319. That's 800-574-1319. ITT Technical Institute, education for the future. 800-574-1319.
Sometimes people buy cookies as a gift for us to send to our soldiers. They tell us it reminds them of home.
Emily is one of thousands of Girl Scouts who will send cookies to troops stationed overseas.
Children shouldn't have to take abuse because they aren't strong enough to escape it. I want to give them a helping hand.
Alicia uses proceeds from her cookie sales to provide mentoring programs at a shelter in her community.
Selling Girl Scout cookies has taught me how to manage money, be responsible, and talk to other people.
Tanya wants to go to business school and hopes to run her own company someday.
On a visit to the food bank, I learned that in this economy, more and more people need help to feed their families.
Morgan and other Girl Scouts are starting a project to help get food to those who need it most. Every Girl Scout cookie has a mission, to help girls do great things. Find your cookies now at GirlScoutCookies.org.
It's your life, your health, it's your show. You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show, with Joe Galewski and Dr. Deb Lonser, and starring Dr. Michael Roizen, M.D.
Contrary to what you might think, death is not a moment in time, such as when the heart stops beating, respiration ends, or the brain stops functioning. Death is a process that can be interrupted well after it's begun. Dr. Sam Parnia is one of the world's leading experts on the scientific study of death, the human mind-brain relationship, and near-death experiences. He directs the AWARE study, Awareness During Resuscitation, and his research is featured on some of the top medical media outlets. He divides his time between Europe, and he's an assistant professor of critical care medicine at State University of New York at Stony Brook. His book is called Erasing Death, a Science That is Rewriting the Boundaries Between Life and Death. It's published by Harper One, an imprint of HarperCollins Publishers. Dr. Parnia, thanks for coming on today. Do you think in the next 10 or 15 minutes we'll be able to answer the question of what happens when we die? Will that be possible?
I think that will be possible, yes.
So what happens?
Thank you for having me.
Thanks. So what happens when we die?
Well, you see, before I explain that, I think it's important to realize that most people have a very fixed idea about what is life and death. And that most people think that death is a finite moment, and that once you've been defined as being dead by definition, you can't come back again. And that used to be true because until quite recently, we had no way of reversing death. However, what we've come to understand now, particularly in the last 10 years, is that actually it's only after a person dies and turns essentially into a corpse that the cells inside the body start to die. And the process by which brain cells die don't take just 4 or 5 minutes. They can take many hours. And therefore, death itself is reversible for many hours after it's occurred if we can manipulate the processes and slow down the rate by which brain cells die and restart the heart and bring a person back to life.
Well, let's get more on the topic now with Dr. Mike Roizen. Dr. Mike?
So, Dr. Parnia, and by the way, this is a wonderful book, and there are some great stories in here which we'll get to. And I've actually had a couple of people, not just a couple, about 10 people have emailed me on the email line, and anyone can do that, udocs, Youdocs, @gmail.com, and I'll ask the question, or 1-877-711-5211 for calling in direct. But one of the questions I had that you cover in the book is, what is death then? How do you define death, and how do doctors pronounce you dead?
Well, in general, we consider consider somebody dead when their heart stops beating, because what happens is as soon as your heart stops beating, a person stops breathing, and also the brain shuts down. And that's why people develop these fixed and dilated pupils. The eyes become fixed because the brain reflexes go. The person becomes motionless and lifeless, and we define them as being dead. And that's how we define people, even in hospitals today, and that's why we give people a precise time of death. It's that moment that is considered death. And that is still the case, except that whereas until quite recently this was really the end and nothing could be done, we now have developed systems and technology that will allow us to reverse that many hours after that moment has occurred.
So when you say many hours, give me a hint how long you could reverse that. In other words, what's the longest period of time you could conceive of today? And then how do you think, if you were going to guess, how do you think that will change over the next, say, 10 years?
Well, I'm an intensive care doctor, and I'm an expert on resuscitation. That's my specialty, and that's what I do for a living, you know. And what I can tell you is that there is no absolute fixed time, because we don't know exactly when brain cells, for instance, become irreversibly and irretrievably damaged after a person dies. Of course, it happens at some point. So what I can do is tell you about certain case reports of people who have been revived. And the longest that I've seen published in medical literature is 4, 5, perhaps 6 hours after a person had died. And the reason for that, and it may seem sort of completely strange to people listening, is that, as I mentioned, brain cells take many hours to reach the point where they're completely dead themselves. And various things can slow that down. The most notable being a body that has been preserved and kept relatively cold will take much longer for its brain cells to die and essentially decay, and therefore it can be brought back. So many of these people have been brought back where they've either died, for example, drowned in a cold lake, or they've died in a cold environment, and then they've been rescued or found, you know, many hours later, and then eventually revived. And the longest, as I said, the case that I've seen was a woman who died in Japan and was published about 1.5 years ago, where they miraculously got her back, 4, 5, 6 hours after she died, and then following which they performed 6 hours of resuscitation on her. And then she left the hospital 3 weeks later, walking out herself.
Now, we have a note of someone who sent a story about one of their friends who somehow died, left his body, had a conversation during this process with his cousin, who had died 3 years earlier, who said to him, go back, it's not your time. And he was resuscitated and remembers that as a very vivid story. And you have a lot of stories in the book. How common is that?
You see, one of the sort of inadvertent discovery or consequence of the fact that physicians like myself, scientists, have gone essentially beyond the threshold of death, beyond what had forever seemed possible, and are now bringing people back to life, is that we've had to study the processes that occur in the brain and other organs after death. So in a sense, we've stumbled upon the afterlife, whether we like it or not. That's what's happened. And what we found is that in these last few decades, many millions of people have been resuscitated and brought back to life after they'd entered the period beyond death. And they have very consistent experiences, which includes feeling very, very peaceful, feeling joyous, seeing a bright, warm, welcoming light, sometimes describing, as you just mentioned, seeing a deceased relative who guide them almost as if they're there to welcome them. They sometimes describe a sensation of seeing a being that is full of love and compassion that educates and guides them through, and also going to a very beautiful place. And then for various reasons, they come back, as you mentioned in this case. And also some of them describe, which is astonishing, watching doctors and nurses doing things to them and recalling specific conversations, specific details that they could not have known about from a time when essentially their brain no longer functioned and they've gone through death. So what we've come to understand essentially is that we have many people who are providing us with an account of what it's like to go beyond death, what it is after death, what the so-called philosophical afterlife is. And these are, there are many, many millions of cases like this now from all over the world.
Now, you're describing a situation where the brain cells still have the ability and still apparently are functioning. Has this changed your view of, is there an afterlife? Has it changed your view of religion? And how do you deal with that in this study?
Well, I think the first thing I'd like to point out is that actually the brain does not function, and that's important for people to understand, is that when a person dies, there are many studies that have been done in humans and animals that show that within literally 5 seconds, the brain completely flatlines. And this continues even when doctors like myself are trying to bring them back to life again, because we can't get enough blood into the brain. So what's astonishing to us is that the human mind, consciousness, what the early Greeks used to call the psyche, or later translated into the word soul, in essence, that thing that makes us into who we are, doesn't become annihilated after a person has died, and essentially goes into some sort of hibernation state that
well,
we can then bring
we're
back.
Going to, we will continue there, Dr. Parnia. It's
sure,
Dr. Parnia, P-A-R-N-I-A, Erasing Death. We'll be right back. Joe?
Thank you, Dr. Mike. More with Dr. Parnia coming up in the Real Age Tip before the end of the hour. This is You, the Owner's Manual radio show with Dr. Michael Roizen on Radio MD. Stay well.
Are you tired of getting sick and tired? Are you tired of doctors not knowing what's wrong with you? D-Herbs may have the answer. D-Herbs, number one in herbal remedies. D-Herbs' main goal is to enlighten and properly educate people to the importance of human health and nutrition. D-Herbs, home of the full body cleanse. Everyone needs to cleanse. If you eat meat and dairy products, you need to cleanse. If you're eating processed foods, you need to cleanse. 90% of today's diseases that we suffer from are diet related. Cleansing opens the door to healing and rejuvenation. Whether you need help with a chronic disease, weight loss, or to jumpstart and eliminate fatigue, D-Herbs Full Body Cleanse can help. There's a better way to live and healthier way to live. Experience healing. Visit us at dherbs.com. That's D-H-E-R-B-S.com. Or call us at 866-434-3727. That's 866-434-3727.
Downsized, outsourced, pink slipped? Afraid of losing your home? Forbes magazine named our company one of the top 10 business ideas of 2012, where ordinary people are creating extraordinary incomes.
Hi, I am Elena from Miami. I was a traditional business owner with all the headaches that come with that. But I replaced that multiple franchise income working from home full time, and I spent all the time I want with my son.
Get out of the rat race. Work from home and start earning great money as soon as next week.
Hi, David from Boston. I was in the real estate industry for 12 years when the bottom completely fell out of that business. I really had my back against the wall with five young kids depending on me. I've now been in this business for less than a full year, and I'm actually better off today, income-wise, than I was in my best year ever in real estate.
Go to OneOccupyWealth.com now and change your life today. That's the number OneOccupyWealth.com. OneOccupyWealth.com. Start earning great money as soon as next week.
I can solve difficult problems for a Fortune 500 company.
I can run a successful business.
I can put my military experience to work for your company.
I can manage your home improvements.
I can publicize your message.
I can teach your children.
But I can't put my skills to work for your organization
if I'm not given the opportunity.
Nearly 50 million Americans have disabilities. Capitalize on their talents with employment practices that benefit everyone. Learn more at whatcanyoudocampaign.org.
Hi, I'm Olympic gold medalist Shawn Johnson. I want to make sure you know about the March of Dimes March for Babies. This walk is really special to me. I was born with an Apgar score of 0, which is not an ideal way to start. Every day, babies start life the same way, with the odds stacked against them. Their first steps are made possible by ours, all of ours. Take the first step at marchforbabies.org. Let's walk together for stronger, healthier babies.
With the American Academy of Pediatrics, I'm Dr. Don Schifrin. While planning gifts for your children, grandchildren, nieces, and nephews this holiday season, don't forget about toy safety. Toys need to match a child's abilities, so always check the manufacturer's age recommendations on the toy first. In general, toy parts should be much larger than the child's mouth to prevent injuries, including choking. To avoid serious eye or ear injuries, steer clear of toys that shoot small objects into the air or make loud noises. The eyes, nose, and other small parts on soft toys and stuffed animals should be securely fastened. If a toy comes with instructions, make sure you read and demonstrate them to the child and make sure she understands the proper way to use the toy. And note, never buy hobby kits such as chemistry sets for any child younger than 12. For more tips on keeping your holidays safe with your children and family, visit www.aap.org. With a Minute for Kids, I'm Dr. Don Schifrin.
Don't miss a minute. Listen at your leisure, always online and on demand at RadioMD.com. You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
Dr. Mike's Real Age Tip of the Week in 5 minutes. Dr. Sam Parnia, one of the world's leading experts on the study of death, the human mind-brain relationship, and near-death experiences. His book called Erasing Death, The Science That Is Rewriting the Boundaries Between Life and Death. It's published by HarperCollins. And here's Dr. Mike Roizen.
Now, where we were is we were talking about what I perceived as the memories that the brain had ensconced of a conversation when the brain wasn't getting enough blood flow. And you correctly pointed out that the brain doesn't get enough blood flow, so the brain cells itself are not active. And this related to something that must happen or must relate to what out-of-body experiences are. So can you continue on that?
I think, yes, exactly. I was explaining that what we've come to understand is that the human mind, the psyche, the soul, whatever you want to call it, that thing that makes us into who we are, it doesn't become annihilated. And seems to continue to function even when there is no brain activity and a person has gone through death. Now, for many years, you know, scientists have tried to explain these theories, and they've thought that maybe they're due to some sort of lack of oxygen or some sort of hallucination, effectively, brought on by a dying brain. But what we now understand is that those theories, while they were certainly very interesting at the time, are outdated, because we now know that the brain doesn't function, and therefore you can't even put these down to a hallucination. In order for you to hallucinate, you still have to have a functioning brain, whereas these people don't have it. And so it suggests that actually, contrary to many people's perceptions, it may simply be that the thing that makes into who we are continues and is not necessarily produced by the brain, but interacts with the brain. And This is something that we're investigating through scientific means now.
So what does this, I suppose, what does this mean for, will we have some way of in of both preserving brain tissue and other tissues or regenerating them in the future so that heart stoppage will no longer be the consistent time of death?
Well, you see, at the same time that we discovered CPR was the time when we also discovered ventilators and respirators that we could keep people alive on in the intensive care unit. And what we found was that although traditionally, you see, the brain, the heart, and the lungs are linked together so that if one of them stops working, the others will also stop working and a person dies. But for the first time in history, around the time of 1960, we were able to keep people alive, even when their brain is shut down because of catastrophic injury, on a respirator in intensive care. And that while eventually their hearts did stop beating and they did stop breathing, but this process took on some time, and during that time, their brain cells became damaged and eventually became annihilated. And we later discovered that there is a term we now call brain dead. In other words, a person's brain that's been so damaged could go through the process of dying itself, even if the heart and lungs are artificially being kept active. And so now what we understand is that essentially it's only after a person has died that, and if you've waited long enough so for the cells inside a corpse, for the brain cells inside a corpse to actually completely die, which takes many hours, that death becomes irreversible. But until that point, it is reversible. And we know that brain cells are alive or potentially alive for many hours because experiments have been shown that if you take biopsies of brain samples from cadavers, actually cadavers that have been taken into a mortuary 7 or 8 hours after the person has died, and take those brain biopsies and take it to the laboratory, you can grow brain tissue. So that's essentially the big discovery, and that's how we're now able to reverse death. So a lot of what we do in resuscitation, or the future of resuscitation, which is very exciting, is finding drugs and medications that will slow down the rate by which brain cells die, such that in the future, the time that we can reverse death may go from 4 or 5 hours to 12 to 24 hours after a person has actually died objectively.
Yeah, what does this mean? I mean, there's so many different implications of this, but from a cost standpoint, does this mean, or from a trauma standpoint, does this mean that after a trauma case or after someone is in an accident, if their heart stops, you could immediately get them into an operating room, for example, cool them effectively, and then do something to resuscitate their heart, and then over the long run have a intact human being even whatever it is, 6 or 10 hours after the lack of blood flow due to, for example, a gunshot wound or due to a severing of an aorta or something major like that?
Yes, you're absolutely right. That's exactly what it is that the advances have happened so much the last 10 years that most people, including most physicians, most medical centers, have not been able to keep up and adopt all and implement all the latest advances. But if we do that, then it is possible to bring people back, as you just described, and that in fact today what should be limiting our ability to save people is our ability to fix the underlying problem that killed the person. So for instance, if somebody has a heart attack and dies, we can go into the cath lab and open the blood vessel that has a clot and get the heart beating again. But if someone dies from cancer, that for which today there is no chemotherapy available and the cancer spread all over the body, then obviously trying to restart the heart and reverse death in such a person is futile. But the point here is that we have the means to reverse death itself. It's just the underlying condition. So, you know, as you said, if someone has a gunshot wound and they die, then we know that if we cool the body down, we preserve the brain cells, we give time to our surgeons to go in and find the bleeding vessel, fix it, transfuse the blood, and then restart the heart and bring back a whole person and send them back to their family.
The book is Erasing Death, a fascinating book by Sam Parnia. Joe?
Thank you, gentlemen. Time now quickly is Dr. Mike's Real Age Tip of the Week.
And this tip is peppermint oil is proven to resolve upset stomachs. Don't you love it when science solves the mystery of a time-honored home remedy? It's happening again, and to one of our favorite digestion soothers, peppermint. Turns out that this ancient herbal tummy tamer does its thing by switching off pain-sensitive nerve fibers in your digestive system. That helps explain why pouring yourself a steaming mug of peppermint tea for an upset stomach or popping an enteric-coated peppermint oil capsule to ease irritable bowel syndrome really does work. Yes, with almost all of the herbal wives' tales, there's a limit and something of truth in them. To give them a try, stick with 0.2 to 0.4 milliliters of the oil 3 times a day or use only enteric-coated versions to avoid heartburn. And that's the Real Age Tip of the Week. Joe?
And this is You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show with Dr. Michael Roizen on Radio MD. Stay well.
Hi, this is Melanie Cole, show host here at Radio MD and a mother of two. I want parents to know about Great Start Life Insurance offered by Guarantee Trust Life Insurance Company. Great Start ensures the future insurability of your children. Now, what does that mean? Too often, people will get an illness or an injury at some point in their lives that afterwards can preclude them from receiving life insurance, and that can cause a lot of problems. But by insuring your children now with the Great Start Plan, the insurance that grows with your children, they'll already be insured regardless of future illness or injury. Find out all about the great benefits of the Great Start Plan. Go to GreatStartGTL.com and see for yourself why Great Start is, well, a great start for your kids. Peace of mind at GreatStartGTL.com. That's GreatStartGTL.com. For the Great Start Plan, go to GreatStartGTL.com.
Plan not available in all states. Life insurance underwritten by Guaranteed Trust Life Insurance Company, Glenview, Illinois.
Sometimes people buy cookies as a gift for us to send to our soldiers. They tell us it reminds them of home.
Emily is one of thousands of Girl Scouts who will send cookies to troops stationed overseas.
Children shouldn't have to take abuse because they aren't strong enough to escape it. I want to give them a helping hand.
Alicia uses proceeds from her cookie sales to provide mentoring programs at a shelter in her community.
Selling Girl Scout cookies has taught me how to manage money, be responsible, and talk to other people.
Tanya wants to go to business school and hopes to run her own company someday.
On a visit to the food bank, I learned that in this economy, more and more people need help to feed their families.
Morgan and other Girl Scouts are starting a project to help get food to those who need it most. Every Girl Scout cookie has a mission, to help girls do great things. Find your cookies now at GirlScoutCookies.org.